From English professor to nurse author, PTSD, there's an app for that, multilingual hospital programs, and we're going to follow up with part two of our segment on hospice and palliative care nursing in our crossover episode from Nursing Notes Live. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. We'll be getting into the meat of the show here with our new segments and our part two of our section on hospice and palliative care in just a sec. But I do want to remind you that links to everything we discuss in each and every episode, plus a whole lot more other articles, news items, and specifics, all available for you over at nursingshow.com. Head over to nursingshow.com. You'll find a link at the top of the page for show notes. You can click on that, find the most recent episode, or scroll down and find previous episodes. You can also go over and sign up for our email newsletter there, find links to our Facebook fan page, a whole lot more, all over at nursingshow.com. I would urge you to check it out frequently. There are links back to a lot of what we have going on in that particular site, and of course, links to a lot of other things that we are doing around the country and different things I do all over the place. So all of that linked off the Nursing Show site, and I hope you'll take a look at that. I love to hear back from you, so you can leave a comment there on the site on any of the articles. You can also reach me directly by email. Send those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from each and every one of you. Try really hard to get back to you as well. So I will return your emails, send them in, and I look forward to hearing comments, suggestions, corrections, whatever you need to talk about. Love to hear from you. Also, don't forget to catch up with me on the Twitter and Facebook and other social media pages. You can find me under the handle PodMedic almost everywhere. And I would also urge you to become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page on Facebook. Facebook.com/nursingshow. And then just click the like button at the top of the page and you'll get some of the updates. I put other things over there than I do on the regular Nursing Show site. Quick links to things I think you might be interested in once or twice a day sometimes, but three or four times a week at the most usually. And ultimately, it's just another way for you to have a resource to keep in touch with what's going on here at The Nursing Show. And I hope you'll follow up with that and support The Nursing Show over on Facebook. That's it. We'll go ahead and get into the news here coming right up. Let's jump on into this week's news items, and I'll kick off with a story on Teresa Brown. We've actually had Teresa Brown done an interview with her on the show. We've had her on talking about a variety of things, basically talking about her career path and her change as an oncology nurse into becoming a career author as a nurse and still working as an oncology nurse. One of the interesting things about her career path is she was originally a college English professor, wanted to always be an author, but she was an English professor and she decided to go back to school and got her degree as a nurse, became active as an oncology nurse, and then started writing about her experiences and is now a New York Times blog columnist in their healthcare section and write some great articles over there. And we've referred to them here on the show before, I know. Talked about them over at insightsinnursing.com on that program. She's been active and we've actually interviewed her. I've interviewed her over at Nursing Notes Live on the program I do for the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future. And we'll hear some of that program basically on hospice nursing later in this show, not the Teresa Brown incident. But you can find all that episode over there. And she's just an interesting look at how nursing spans so many different aspects of our lives and so many different possibilities for a career choice. I mean, heck, look what the heck I'm doing as a nurse and working in basically as a nurse journalist, trying to get information about nursing and healthcare and other things out there. And I think that these are all important ways to become a nurse and be a nurse actively in your community. Teresa has a book called Critical Care, A New Nurse Faces Death, Life, and Everything in Between. If you haven't checked out that book, it's available in most of your booksellers out there. There'll be a link in the show notes if you want to check it out over in Amazon. And I would urge you to take a look at this book and take a look at Teresa's writing. It's just, she's a very talented author, as you would expect of an English professor, and she's been very good at sharing her experiences as a nurse and looking at some tough issues in nursing and healthcare in general from a nurse's perspective. And she does a great job of representing us. And there's a really neat article from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's website on interviewing her and talking about her life and career path. And you might want to check out that link in the show notes. And Teresa's a real interesting lady, and I would urge you to continue to follow up with what she's doing. Talking about wounds of war now, talking about our veterans and a lot of people coming back from the conflicts in recent years with some psychological issues associated with being involved in combat, post-traumatic stress disorder. They also, people experiencing problems with brain injuries and recovering from these problems, depression. A lot of these problems that are not unusual for anyone coming back from a war. We've seen it after every major conflict in history, and it's going on now. But the Defense Department and the Veterans Administration are trying a lot of interesting novel ways to treat this, and one of them is, heck, why don't you have an app for that, right? I mean, we joke about it, right? There's an app for that. Well, guess what? If you have PTSD and you are looking for a resource to help you deal with some symptoms that might have had an onset, you're looking for a resource, you're looking to understand what's going on with you, they've created an app for you to have for post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD Coach. They also have a T2 Mood Tractor. Breathe to Relax app. And these are all focused on helping people deal with some psychological and mood problems. And what I'm hoping is, as these types of things often happen, technology developed in the defense area and arena often later becomes standard consumer equipment. Where do you think our cell phones came from? The internet, GPS systems, all of that was developed originally by the military. What's interesting is that this healthcare aspect usually is focusing only on traumatic injury treatments. But yet we are finding that, this type of technology can also spill over into our handling of people with mood disorders, people with post-traumatic stress disorder. And there are a lot of people with those problems that aren't ex-military. And so, you know, it's nice to see these types of programs being developed. And just to give you an example, you have a problem and you need to deal with something, the PTSD Coach. It helps you self-assess your symptoms, gives you step-by-step instructions on how to do muscle relaxation techniques and deep breathing, helps you create a phone list of people to keep as part of the app for who you need to contact when you're having some trouble with something, whether it's a resource coach or a counselor or a family group of family members, whatever the case may be. It also has a link directly to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. So all of these things as part of this application make it just another way to help people cope on their own and hopefully make them feel a little less alone in this situation that they're in and understand that this is something that they can cope with and can deal with. And if they are having problems doing that, they can avail themselves of the resources provided in the app. I think this is an amazing tool, and I'm looking forward to other things like this. What else can we provide for people? And there's a ton of great medical apps out there helping people track their diabetes care, help them tracking blood pressure and other health aspects, fitness applications, weight loss applications. There's a ton of different ways to do this, and maybe there's a way to do this for your specialty. So think about these types of things, and maybe you need to go to your hospital facility or someplace else and maybe see if they have some resources to help you develop an application for a mobile device. Everybody's got smartphones now, so why don't we make use of the smartphones or those iPod touches or any of these other smart devices and give them an opportunity to make them a great resource for your patients? It could save money, it could save patients time and effort and complications. Everything gets better when you can provide them a rich follow-up resource like this, and I think it's great. Finally, just a quick look at a hospital looking at ways to overcome language barriers. An increasing Latino population in a lot of areas has caused a lot of facilities to try to change the ways they deal with care. Now, this isn't an issue about immigration. I don't even want to go there. That's a political hot button issue that I'm not prepared to talk about. But from a healthcare standpoint, we are required to help treat some of these people when they need help. When they come in and need emergency care, critical care for themselves, for their family members, we're not going to turn them away. But do we want them to get good care? Yes, absolutely. Can we provide them better resources for care that are in their own language? Yes, we should and should do that. It's part of cultural sensitivity. It's part of our approach to good patient care, communication, everything else. So what does that mean? It means discharge papers should be provided in a language the patient can understand. And we're not just talking about Hispanics here, but everything. Their prescription bottles should be printed in a way that they can understand them. How are they going to take medications when they get discharged if they can't understand the prescription instructions? These are things that cause them to come back to the hospital and use more resources. So it really is a more cost-effective way to handle things by providing that. And there's a great article in here about one hospital at Duke University Hospital where they have actually have somebody that is the coordinator of the hospital's Latino project looking at these types of where are we dropping the ball for this patient population, where can we improve care, and where can we reduce additional down the road costs because we've improved care and communication now. And I think it's an interesting look. And hey, this is exactly the kind of thing nurses are suited for. And just another look and an interesting way nurses are engaged in the care process in a different way. And I look forward to seeing more and more articles like this. Are you involved in some type of care program like this? Do you have some kind of outreach or coordinator that oversees how you deal with these at-risk populations in your community? And they may be, depending on where you are, many different types of ethnic groups. But are you dealing with that? Now, do you have somebody that's really looking at that carefully? Let me know about it. I'd love to know what kind of other programs are out there. This is one article about it, but there are others, and I'd love to hear about the one that perhaps is going on in your organization. Time now for the rest of the segment from last week's Nursing Notes Live introductory episode. And just kind of a crossover episode again. If you haven't caught the rest of this, you can catch the beginning of this on Hospice and Palliative Care panel from last week's show where it started. And we'll finish up that discussion on hospice and palliative care. Again, this is a crossover episode from another project I work on where I actually work with the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future, producing their Nursing Notes Live podcast each month. Two episodes on whatever the nursing topic is for their Nursing Notes newsletter. And it's really been a great opportunity for me to talk to some amazing nurse leaders in a variety of career paths. And we had a recent email in from a listener suggesting hospice or palliative care as a topic for a future episode. And I thought this was a great opportunity to do some cross-pollination and show you what else is out there for nurses. If you like the nursing show, I think you'll like Nursing Notes Live. You should check it out. It's available in iTunes and all the other podcast directories, as well as, of course, over at nursingnoteslive.com, which takes you directly to the Nursing Notes Facebook fan page, where you can check out all the great stuff that's posted over there, as well as become a subscriber to this particular program. So check it out at nursingnoteslive.com. And let's get on into that second half of our segment on hospice and palliative care. And it's funny because I've heard some people say, well, hospice care is just for the, that final 6 weeks of life, which of course, goes down the whole path of what you were just talking about. But really, there's so much that hospice can do for that patient that is terminal, but 6 months or even 12 months out from the, their end of life. There's so much that they can do and achieve and live in a full life in that time frame. Is there any initiative to try to expand the scope of hospice's reach, or is it already expanded and I'm just not aware of it?
There actually has been enormous energy over the last decade in extending the good work of hospice into other settings of care and much earlier in the course of illness. So the National Consensus Project for Quality Palliative Care was an effort pulling together each of the leading palliative care organizations, the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, the Center to Advance Palliative Care, Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association and the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization all came together and created national guidelines for palliative care. And what those guidelines do is to really emphasize that hospice is one element of palliative care. It is the system of care focused on the last phase of life, generally the last 6 months of life, but that palliative care, care that is focused on quality of life and symptom management and enhancing life during serious illness, is care that should be implemented at the time of diagnosis. And so, again, just as we've seen the growth of hospice in the country, we now are seeing the integration of palliative care in oncology care, cardiac care, renal disease, and stage pulmonary disease, so that at the time someone is diagnosed with a serious illness, we need to immediately begin to integrate good symptom management, interdisciplinary care, support for families, all of the elements of palliative care. And then if we do that, if we're really integrating palliative care as a philosophy throughout serious illness, it will also make for a much smoother and earlier transition into hospice as a delivery system when the patient is in the final months of life. But there is now an enormous movement with the majority of hospitals in the country now in some way including palliative care, developing palliative care services. So palliative care applies across settings and across diseases and from the time of diagnosis.
Right. I would like to add, and I appreciate Betty's response, and in truth, while I have worked as a home hospice nurse, when I completed my master's degree, I took a position as a palliative care nurse practitioner, and so I see myself as being in the field of palliative care and contributing to hospice. And I would also highlight, last fall, there was a study that was released in the New England Journal of Medicine that looked at the impact of palliative care, where they demonstrated that, in this case for patients with lung cancer, that they had significantly less symptom burden, that they had greater patient satisfaction, and that they actually lived longer when they received palliative care and when they were able to not only have their symptoms relieved, their physical symptoms relieved, but they were also in a position to be able to talk through all these important medical decisions. When you think about it, all of us, when we're faced with important life decisions, oftentimes we'll reach out to experts or trusted others to help us make these decisions. That's part of what palliative care does. And I would also argue that, again, this year, those nice folks at the Gallup poll have demonstrated that nurses remain the most trusted professionals to the general public, and that nurses are extremely well positioned not only to have the kind of trusting relationships that assure that patients' needs are being met, but also to help support some of these discussions as people look at how to plan for their futures and, you know, what options they want to pursue in terms of managing their treatment.
Something occurred to me, this thought that, you know, why is it that in patients that are diagnosed with a terminal or very severe illness, that this penchant for the acute medicine setting to, heck, treat our patients to death. I loved how you pointed out that patients with palliative care lived longer with a terminal illness. How do you build a balance between an appropriate treatment program that may prolong life versus palliative care that builds quality of life? And then the conflict that occurs between two different medical or healthcare-related goals.
Well, I think in many ways, you know, we are to blame for this kind of system that we have created, because what has happened over the last 50 years is the U.S. healthcare system has focused on cure, on prevention of disease, on a belief that our medical system is infallible and that for every disease or problem that humans can have that there's a solution to it. And so therefore, you know, we constantly see patients coming in the hospital and families saying, but gee, you know, grandma's only 92 and everybody in our family lives to be 100. Or, you know, the chronically ill person with heart disease comes to the ER and the family says, but, you know, you always pull her through. The doctors are wonderful here. Oh, the nurses were great last time she was here. So people have come to believe that, you know, death is avoidable, that that every problem can be successfully treated. And it's, you know, a normal human response. We want to live. We want our loved ones to live. And yet we now have gone full spectrum from, you know, early part of our history where people died of diseases early in life, where most diseases were not treatable, that all that could be done was attention to their comfort. And then over 50 years, we made this system where it seems like death is avoidable. So with the current constraints on our healthcare system, we are having to realistically face the limits of what can be provided, both in terms of when care that is aggressive and disease-focused no longer serves the patient well, but also when it simply will be futile. And these are very, very difficult things because everybody wants, you know, 92-year-old grandma to live a little longer, and everyone wants to be cured of their liver failure or pancreatic disease or, you know, their end-stage heart disease. So these are huge social issues, but nurses play a vital role in helping patients and families understand treatment options. Nurses are vital in helping patients and families articulate their values and their needs. Nurses are translators. They take information that's been delivered from physicians and others and make it understandable to patients and families so they can make best choices. But all of this is enormously complex and is really a reflection of society. But fortunately, nurses are in every system of care and are closest to patients and families.
I think a very good example of that would be like the automatic defibrillator and the fact that, you know, patients have these devices implanted, but nobody ever says at what point do you want to not have this, to turn it off. And we don't talk about that when we put it in.
Why do we avoid that discussion? I guess nobody likes to talk about death and dying, but it is a part of the process, and it's not something anyone looks forward to, but if it's closer in the picture because of a given health problem, it should be discussed rather than avoided.
Yeah, I think nurses, though, we have the ability to do so much, and yet we don't pause to say, should it be done? It is the natural human inclination to want to survive. And I think another thing that we often fail to remember as nurses is we have seen 100 deaths or we have seen 1,000 deaths. But for this patient and family in front of us, perhaps this is the first time they have been asked to make these decisions. Perhaps this is the first time that this, you know, loving, wonderful granddaughter has seen someone she loved die. And so it is, of course, natural, expected that family members will want, you know, do everything, you know, make grandma live longer. I don't want to talk about death. You know, I want to talk about her getting better. We should never assume that these conversations will be easy. We shall never assume that patients and families want to talk about these issues. But we do know as nurses what the consequences are of avoiding these conversations, that people find themselves amidst care that really violates their basic values, and that patients become in situations where care that has been implemented now, it needs to be discontinued, and that's very difficult. So I think we need to realize this is exactly as we would expect that it would be in terms of public perception. This is not, we're not going to change this culture easily. But hopefully we are creating history. You know, just as when I was a new nurse, no one could even say the word hospice. Now, every time I'm, you know, talking with someone in my community or sitting on the airplane next to someone or in a grocery store line, and someone says, what do you do? The response now is, oh, hospice, that's wonderful. everybody has a positive story. You know, my grandfather was in the hospice, my neighbor, my husband, and people now have lived a history where they see what hospice can provide, and that is really the best that we can do, is to create a history where our public has seen the benefits of hospice and palliative care, and they understand that it doesn't mean failure. They understand that their ultimate goals of what is best, you know, for those they love includes good palliative care and hospice. So we're amidst history. We're in this journey, and it's we have done an enormous amount. Much of what has happened in the last 30 years has happened because of nurses, and we should be very proud of that. But we have a tremendous amount to do, and we have to do it. The burdens of society and the aging population, the financial burdens on our healthcare systems, we must do this work.
I think in large part, and this is speaking very grossly, that the metric of success in medicine is either cure of disease or sort of substantial significant modification of disease. And that becomes the benchmark against which to compare anything that's being done. And as long as that's the case, I think that that's also going to be driving some of the communication that you were mentioning earlier, the sort of style of communication, such as the example of the implanted cardioverter defibrillator, that people are told, oh, if we put this in, here is what it will achieve. This will correct your or modify your heart failure so that you can continue to live, and it will prevent, you know, this fatal arrhythmia from ensuing. And you're right, we don't have these discussions that say, here's how it's going to impact your life. You know, that this is what it's going to feel like when it goes on. And under these conditions, it's going to go on, it's going to become activated a lot, and you may want to discontinue it. And I think that those conversations, at some level, are experienced as measures of not success or measures of failure. And I think that that also is part of what I personally would like to see change in the culture, that the success is when we're able to match what the patient would like to see happen in terms of their goals with a viable plan of care, that that the patient really is able to drive this and say, you know, I don't like that scary kicked in the chest feeling when my ICD goes off, and I know that I have heart failure, and I know that this is not reversible, that this is the sort of culture that my own personal hope I would like to see evolve.
There are a lot of nurses out there that may not specifically become hospice nurses or go into the palliative care setting specifically, but because they are working with patients that are dealing with these issues or looking at having to soon deal with end-of-life issues, what is a good way for every nurse to find resources or be open to helping guide patients in that direction when it's appropriate?
You're right, that there is sort of palliative nursing that occurs in across all settings, including emergency departments and intensive care units and primary care clinics. And again, these are places where you find nurses who have trusted relationships with patients and families. They're opportunities for learning, not coincidentally, is the LNEC curriculum that Betty Farrell had started. LNEC is End of Life Nursing Education Consortium, and Betty, you'd be a better person to comment on that. And then also, Betty mentioned earlier the Hospice and Palliative Nurses Association. This is the membership society for nurses who are providing palliative nursing to patients facing any sort of serious illness in their life, or families who are facing serious illness in a loved one. And HPNA can be found at hpna.org online. And they also have a number of resources, both printed materials and online e-learning opportunities and teleconferences. They also twice annually have conferences that nurses can attend, one of which is interdisciplinary, that allow folks to develop skill sets that would meet the demands of their patients in the setting that they're working at.
They also have a great core curriculum, too, for certification for hospice and palliative care as well.
Correct.
And that's something that, you know, for those that want to become certified in hospice and palliative care, that's an opportunity for that. But I like that there is an interdisciplinary conference and an approach. And I've seen this across the nursing professional organizations. It's really been exciting to see how all of these organizations have really opened up their resources to nurses in every discipline, because we just interact with patients across so many aspects of their lives. I just want to thank all three of you for joining me. This has been a great discussion. Heck, I suspect, I don't know about you, but I could probably sit here and we could talk about this for another half an hour, but we need to wrap up the show. Could somebody just give me the website address if somebody's listening to this and they wanted to go and check it out online?
Yeah, www.hpna.org. And Pam had mentioned certification. You can also become certified as a hospice and palliative nurse, and that is run by a separate organization, the National Board for Certification of Hospice and Palliative Nurses. That website is www.nbchpn.org.
And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the program this week. Remember, you can head over to nursingshow.com and find links to everything discussed in this episode, all the news articles, as well as links to more information on hospice and palliative care nursing, and to the Nursing Notes Live pages and information from discovernursing.com. All available for you over there, and I would urge you to follow up on that information. You can, of course, leave comments for me over on the Nursing Show website's articles. Just click the comments link at the top at the bottom of the page. And don't forget to get back in touch with me some way, somehow, whether it's that way. When you leave a comment there, it automatically shoots me an email, so that's cool. You can also, of course, send me a direct email, nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you. Keep reaching out and sending those emails in so I can hear from you any way you can. And I will try to get back in touch with you. I work very hard to make sure I respond back to all of the listener and viewer comments. Don't forget, you can watch The Nursing Show over at nursingshow.tv, and you can find links to that plus other short segments that are posted periodically, and of course the weekly Nursing Show video episodes, all available at nursingshow.tv. And you can find me under PodMedic on Twitter and Facebook, and the fan page on Facebook as well for The Nursing Show. So follow up on all those resources, and you can find those all linked over at nursingshow.com. Without too much further ado, let's go ahead and close out the show. And I will remind you that I'm Jamie Davis. I'll be back again every week with another episode here of The Nursing Show. We try to bring those shows out on Fridays for you, so you can kind of go into the weekend, listen to the show, whether it's on the way to work or while you're doing stuff around the home, or just getting out and cruising. It's great to listen to your favorite health podcast. And of course, you can find a lot of other great programming over at the ProMed Network, and that's promednetwork.com. But whatever you do, keep back checking back here, and remember to stay safe and stay tuned to The Nursing Show. Take care.